540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Allison Keys in Washington. The skies around the East Coast are far from friendly thanks to smoke from those Canadian wildfires. Above New York City, the skies were an ominous orange for much of the day. Experts warned people to stay inside if possible. KYW House Desk Kuznets with more.
You can see it, you can feel it. You can smell it.
Wildfires in Canada are impacting air quality on the East Coast as far south as Philadelphia, where city and suburban schools were forced to cancel outdoor activities. A smoky fog obscured buildings.
I see haze, almost like when I drove down here, I felt like it was August and I expected the temperature to be like 95 degrees.
Philadelphia health officials and neighboring New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy urged people to stay indoors. The governor pointed to climate change as the reason for the unhealthy air quality. Hadass Kuznets for CBS News, Philadelphia.
I'm Stephen Portnoy at the White House, where the air quality is expected to worsen through the end of the week. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the U.S. has been sending hundreds of firefighters north to assist the Canadians in knocking down the wildfires.
It is yet another alarming example of the ways in which the climate crisis is disturbing our lives and our communities.
Now to Richmond, Virginia, where police say bad blood between two teens ended in fatal gunfire right after a graduation ceremony. An 18-year-old who had just received his diploma and his 36-year-old stepfather were shot and killed. Rick Edwards is the acting police chief.
The two individuals, Sean Jackson and Amari Pollard, knew each other. This was targeted at one individual, so they knew each other and had an ongoing dispute.
That Republican presidential field just got bigger again. Former Vice President Mike Pence formally tossed his hat in the ring and forcefully attacked former President Trump.
We will restore a threshold of civility in public life so we can bring real solutions to the challenges facing our nation.
There is a show going on in Hawaii thanks to a volcano.
It's been sending fountains of lava as high as 200 feet in the air since Wednesday, and it's providing quite a show.
All in all, it's spectacular and a great time to visit the volcano.
But Hawaii County Mayor Mitch Roth says if you have health issues, be careful.
We're very safe. The eruption is not impacting any communities, but just be aware of the air quality, and if you're sensitive to those kinds of things, it may be a good idea to wear a mask.
Kilauea is Hawaii's second largest volcano. Linda Kenyon, CBS News.
Hawaii's Emergency Management Agency says there's no indication, at least so far, that populated areas are threatened. The volcano also erupted in January. This is CBS News.
Progressive Insurance. Progressive can protect your home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, RV, and more. In short, a lot of things. Bundle today at progressive.com.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in Southeast Wisconsin. The discovery of a 17-year-old's body is the third time in 5 years that Milwaukee City employees left someone in a car that was eventually towed away. James Stokes Jr. was found dead inside of a crashed car at the city's tow lot Monday. The Kenosha Police body camera footage released of a shootout in December includes a 911 call placed by the suspect.
I have a hostage right now. I've already got two people already.
Investigators concluded that officers did nothing wrong and that suspect Matthew Lopez shot himself. Mount Pleasant police are looking for help in a fatal hit-and-run case that occurred at the end of May. It happened at the intersection of Highway 32 and Larson Street. The suspect vehicle is a gray Honda Accord 2013 to 2017 with driver's side damage in the rearview mirror. For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
app.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day million-dollar advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing, advertise today with the Civic Media Network of radio stations.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
always funny to me was like states' rights when it's convenient. And we talk about the states having the right to govern themselves, quote unquote. And so I think that Illinois is going to send the clear message, you are not welcome here, no matter how much you spend to try to buy the vote and buy the quality of life for the working person. We are a working person state, and we're not going to allow you to buy a voice, and you're not going to be able to buy a vote.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about your rights, and you talk about freedom. And it's always interesting to find out, you know, whose rights and whose freedom they're talking about. And again, it's always on the backs of someone else. It's always on the backs of the working people. And this is why I think, you know, in this moment, and the reason we're in Chicago is to screen the film Vigilante with Greg Palast over at Rainbow Push. This idea of, you know, making sure that, you know, everyone's able to vote. And right now, sadly, you know, in Georgia, you know, the attack is on minority voters and on poor voters. This is one of those which side are you on moments. That idea that, you know, together we can only together can we be stronger. And I find these divisions, you know, predictable, but things that should be angering to us and making us want to overcome them, because our labor history shows that we can do it. We just don't do it enough.
Well, I think that what buoys these interests, these special interests, is not what you would think. I think it's apathy. I think apathy is absolutely the biggest cancer that we have in this labor movement, and what those special interests rely on. They confound, they confuse, they literally will throw a smoke bomb in, and while you're worried about what the Kardashians are doing, they're stealing your freaking rights. And that's something that, you know, we have to stay vigilant about. You know, I listened to the arguments, for example, against the Workers' Rights Amendment, and one of the arguments is, well, wait a minute, we can't pass that. It'll raise your taxes $2,900. But then out of the same breath, Dan Bailey says in his debate with Governor Pritzker, well, we don't need it because we have those rights right now. Well, wait a minute. Did it raise your taxes $2,900 yesterday? So if it didn't raise it yesterday and it's the same rights we have right now, something is not computing. As you know, my children say, the math ain't mathing. And so you need to make it make sense. And so those kinds of fear tactics and jumbled, you know, messaging and all of those things to confound and confuse lead people to go, I don't get it. Let me just stay out of it. And that apathy is exactly where they win. And I think we're going to show the message in Illinois, we are not asleep. We see what you're doing. We're rejecting it out of it, summarily rejecting it. And your rhetoric and your nonsense is no longer welcome here.
I got to wonder what orifice they pulled that number out of.
Oh, you know which one. The exit only.
Yeah. No, because, you know, I always wonder where they come up with these numbers, because I know they've created all of these think tanks, this incestuous pool of think tanks who, you know, reaffirm their other nonsense and build on each other. They live in this alternative world that's funded by our billionaires to serve our billionaires. But I often wonder, you know, where they dream these numbers up from, because as you pointed out, it's the law of the land now. You're simply just saying that this is what we want to remain for future generations. It's almost comical if it weren't so dangerous.
Exactly. And we've seen the hazard of allowing something that sounds like a joke, like nobody's going to take this seriously. Nobody's going to take that guy seriously. And next thing you know, they got the nuke codes, right? So we should learn a valuable lesson that as ridiculous as it sounds, in the right climate, with the right factors, in a perfect world, it'll take hold. And a lie becomes the truth before you know it.
Yeah.
And so I worry that they've honed their game on being more distraction, having more distraction and less substance, and getting better and better at honing it every time they fail. And that concerns me. So we have to do our job to keep the facts up front. You know, I asked somebody who was making this argument to me, so let me understand this. you're not against workers. Oh, no, not against workers. Okay. And you're not against rights, right? You like rights, right? Yeah, I like rights. But you don't like workers' rights. That's not what I'm saying. So what are you saying? Because you're fighting awfully hard. If you're okay with workers and you're okay with rights, you're just not okay with workers' rights. You have to make it make sense. And I think when you strip back all of the nonsense, it comes down to common sense. And I think that that's what they're hoping we don't really fall back on. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Corliss King. She's the second vice president of TWU Local 556, the Union of Southwest Airlines Flight Attendants, TWU556.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do. And you bring up an interesting point, the common sense argument of, you know, they're for rights. They say they love workers. The difference is they love exploitable workers. They love desperate workers. They love pliable workers. They love people who are just happy to have a job and aren't going to ask for much. Because, well, we've beaten the working class down sufficiently to where the standard of living for most working people has diminished over the last 40 years. I know my lifestyle has gotten, the wage that I make is still a good one. But over the last, 35 years of my work life, my standard of living has gone down because of the attacks on working people. And this is one of those moments where I want the next generation to understand you have power and you have the ability to do something about that. And I think we're in that moment.
Well, I think that you are correct, and I will tell you this. Here's what encourages me. We are seeing a resurgence of unions, not just in public opinion, but in our young people. I think that we need to take a page from the book of Amazon, of Starbucks, of gig workers, and seeing that we are actually getting a shot in the arm in the labor movement in our young people. And so I am lifted by that, but that makes me even more proud to do the work that we're doing to submit the future for them. I also have to ask, kind of like what your dad was saying, like, why are you fighting so hard to make sure that someone makes less than $15 an hour when you make $1,500 an hour? I don't understand that. Like, what? Why are you fighting so hard to say, oh, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but you keep your boot on my neck? So I don't understand how we empathize. I talk to people all the time, and even people in the labor movement, I'm going to say something probably unpopular, even people in the labor movement who honestly don't look at the fact that an injury to one is an injury to all. In other words, even within our movement sometimes, we have to be reminded, while you have a great CBA, you still have an obligation to lift somebody else who has a CBA that is not as good as yours.
Yep.
And sometimes even we forget that. So I think that a stark reminder is, when people are fighting as hard as they're fighting to keep you from getting something that they don't want for themselves, you have to question, why do they think they need to make sure you don't know your worth? That's really what this is about. Their bottom line is affected by the work of the frontline worker, right?
Yep.
And they need you to believe that the value of your work is less than theirs, when in reality, without you, they're nothing. They don't want you to know that. If you know that Bezos can't make $6,000 an hour or whatever he makes unless he pays somebody else $12 or $15 an hour, when that $12 or $15 an hour worker recognizes the disparity, truly recognizes they're the star of the show, not Jeff Bezos, he just got lucky to find them, that's when the paradigm shifts. And no, that's what they're afraid of.
And the hope is that we take a look at the video of him thanking all of his workers for their sacrifice so he can take his phallic-looking rocket up into space. Because that's how he got there, off the backs and the sacrifice and the struggles of those people who go and do the work every day and create the wealth that he enjoys.
That he is so far removed from. And he's not alone. It is shareholders. It is CEOs. It is agencies that are led by people who are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, that insist that workers figure it out on how to work and live on 15
that they didn't even want you to have.
Yep. No, I remember, you know, it was 2012 when the Fight for 15 campaign began. There was a movement here in Chicago as well, like a sister move. They weren't coordinated, but there was a movement here of people fighting for $15 an hour, restaurant workers that we had on the program back then, as well as the people out of New York, because there was almost an uprising of the moment, and everyone said, no, that's crazy, you're never going to get there. And look, you continue to push, you continue to organize. Now it's almost mainstream. We've got the president talking about it.
Exactly. And that's really what is proving to be the deciding factor, right? When the people move the machine instead of the machine moving the people.
Yep.
And I think that once we recognize our power, and there we go, back to organized labor, right? That's the foundation, the cornerstone of that, that the people lead the movement. The machine is not leading the people. And as long as they convince people, oh, no, this machine has to lead you, you'll always be in the dark. You'll always be behind the wagon instead of pulling it and leading it.
There you go. Corliss, fantastic talking with you. I appreciate you taking a little bit of time for us, sharing some thoughts. Love to have you come back and talk to us again.
I would love that. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for supporting labor the way that you do. I will say one thing very quickly. We're in a prolonged contract fight with Southwest Airlines, and it's people like you and voices like yours that let us get the message out that these corporations have to respect frontline workers. So thank you.
Whatever we can do to help, let us know. Thank you, Corliss King. The reality is she's right. We've got to support each other. It doesn't matter what you do or where you do it. Solidarity, as I say, every generation has to rediscover it. Going to take a quick break, right back here from Chicago in the WCPT AM 820 studios. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 2010. That was the day 33 Chilean miners were finally pulled to safety after being trapped for 69 days. Workers had been mining copper and gold 2,300 feet down at the San Jose mine near the northern city of Copiapo when the mine caved in early August. The company waited several hours to notify authorities, and rescue efforts only began 2 days later. Trapped miners initially tried to escape through ventilation shafts, but found the required ladders missing. Each route they attempted was blocked by fallen rock or threatened additional collapse. A state-owned mining company took over the rescue efforts, and soon they began. As geologist Serena Sorensen noted, prospecting for people. Initial exploratory boreholes failed to locate miners because mine shaft maps had never been updated. Rescuers had no idea whether miners were even still alive. Finally, 17 days later, the eighth borehole reached them. The miners tapped on the drill and taped notes to it, alerting rescuers above that they were indeed alive and well. Food, medicine, and other supplies were lowered down to them as rescue efforts intensified. Mini cameras were also lowered down, and miners videotaped messages of their continued ordeal. They told how they continued to search for possible escape routes and agreed to ration their limited food supplies so they could all survive. The first of three drilling plans to free the miners began. It was an international effort. The Chilean Navy consulted with NASA to design and construct the rescue pods. Throughout the entire process, rescuers worked to prevent additional cave-ins and rock falls. Finally, the extraction process began, and in less than 48 hours, all miners emerged as heroes.
The problem with our so-called free market is that it's not free for you and me. It's largely controlled by monopolies, which are free to inflate prices just because they can, letting gougers gleefully extract unwarranted monopoly profits from us. This milking of consumers by tightly consolidated industries is propelling today's surging price hikes. Brand name corporations claim they're being forced to mark up price tags just to cover rising costs for raw materials, labor, transportation, etc. But in a competitive marketplace, they'd have to eat much of those increases by taking a bit less in profits. Indeed, monopolies are now raising prices simply to squeeze even greater profits from hard-hit consumers, a game of corporate greed that socks America with more inflation. Consider diapers. A year ago, Procter & Gamble announced that the pandemic was driving up its production costs, forcing it to raise prices for its Pampers brand. At the time, it had just posted a quarterly profit of $3.8 billion, so P&G could easily have absorbed a temporary rise in its costs. But instead of holding the price to ease their customers' economic pain, the conglomerate used a global health crisis to justify upping diaper prices. 6 months later, P&G's quarterly profit topped $5 billion. And in that same quarter, P&G spent $3 billion to buy back shares of its own stock, a Wall Street manipulation that artificially bloats the wealth of top executives and other big shareholders. In short, P&G used the excuse of inflation to inflate the price of their diapers, then used the extra money it extracted to inflate the value of its stock to benefit rich shareholders. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, couldn't consumers just switch to Huggies, the brand sold by P&G's main competitor? No, for it's a co-monopolist, having also goosed up its prices.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, as we continue the Working Class Heroes radio tour here in Chicago. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I love about coming to this city is the history. Lots of labor history here. You know, this is where, as we're going to talk about later, the birth of the eight-hour day. This is where the fight for 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. The what we will part being, oh my gosh, groundbreaking. The fact that life should be more than just about work, that you should have, other activities. Something pretty important. I think we're in one of those moments again. And that's why also I'm thrilled to run into some labor folks, some friends, people we've had on the program before. Jose Acala, he is the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades president here at Local 184 in Chicago. Also president of LACLA, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. Also district council of 14, a whole resume of stuff. But Jose from 184, how are we doing today, brother?
Good, brother. Doing great. Thanks for having us here.
Congrats on the resume there. Very impressive. But here's the thing. You know, I come here, and one of the things I love about Chicago is its rich labor history. This is the birthplace of the fight for the eight-hour day, for dignity and respect. We're in a moment where we got to fight for that again.
Yeah, we got to go. We need it. Our numbers. We need to bring up our numbers, our labor numbers. We need people. If you know kids that want to join the union, we'll take them in. All throughout District Council 14 and the Chicago Federation of Labor, with the great help of Bob Ryder.
Now, one of the great things that I think that the Biden administration is doing and doing right is talking about reinvesting in infrastructure, reshoring manufacturing, and talking about strengthening unions, what I call the secret sauce of the greatest era, what the greatest generation left for the future. A prosperous working class. Sad reality is, though, we've lost massive brain drain in the skilled trades. We were told, you don't need to build stuff. You don't need to have, go to college, get a degree, get a corner office, wear the white shirt and the tie. Sad reality is we still need plumbers and pipe fitters and people to pour the concrete and get up on those skyscrapers. We need people who can build stuff.
Correct.
And that's where you guys come in, and where I think the apprenticeship programs in this country that the building trades run, the best kept secret in prosperity that I think there is out there.
We have a great apprenticeship program here in Chicago. Mr. Penske's running it. Out of the international, came to Chicago, and now he's working with the young men and young women that are coming into the trades here. And great, we need, like you said, we're going to need industrial painters for the highways, the bridges, and all the structural painting that needs to be done out there. If you look, go down the expressway, you see all these bridges that need to be redone.
Yeah.
We need industrial painters, and that's one of the big things that we need right now.
You know, I was talking with Jimmy Williams, your international president, not too long ago, and we were talking about, you know, the green energy, and we're talking about a transition and why he supports it. And he goes, you know, those windmills, got a lot of paint to put on those things. And that means jobs, and that means good jobs, family-sustaining wage jobs with health care and retirement and dignity, things that, well, our friends on the extreme right, not so thrilled with.
No, they don't want unions. We just had some clown say, stay in our lane, the other day, in a Pritzker and his competitor were on the air, and he said, stay in our lanes. We don't need to stay in our lanes. We know where we're going, and we don't need anybody to tell us where to go.
Well, we stay in our lanes because we built the lands.
No, no, he's trying to tell us that he's trying to marginalize us.
Oh, no, we built all the lands. They're all our lanes. I'll stay in the lanes, yeah, all of them.
He goes, stay in our lanes. Like, what's this guy talking about?
Because, look, the reality is you look at someone like Rahner, you look at these wealthy people who have figured out how to game the system or exploit people, they wouldn't be where they are without working people who do the work. At the end of the day, every bit of wealth in this country is built by working people. It's time for us to demand a fair share of that.
The sweat and tears, you know, the sweat that we all put in. Just like I give you an example. Our family came here in 1967, okay? The big migration. I'm third generation. My dad's a taper. I'm a taper. John Hancock, Sears, Standard Oil, one mile, Prudential. We built them all. Nobody says anything. Nobody talks about the structures, about what our city's been built on.
Yeah.
Politicians ain't going to build it. The union built it from the ground up.
No, and this is one of the things that I talk about with my building of courage friends all the time. Yeah, they'll drive you through a city and go, I did that. I did that.
Yeah.
and that again, is this kind of pride in workmanship, but pride in building something and leaving something for the future. And I come back to, while building the skyscrapers and our infrastructure, also demanding a solid piece of the middle class, a solid piece of being able to support your family and not working sun up to sun down, not working 7 days a week, not worrying about health security or retirement security, but having that as part of the work that they do.
Thank God for the unions. We wouldn't have the 8-hour work week. You know, the 8-hour, we get 40 hours. We get 8 hours. Anything over 8 hours is overtime. Time and a half for some places, double time for others. That's put my kids through college. That's put me into retirement.
So let me ask you about this, because, you know, you said you're third generation, and it used to be one generation after the next. You know, your kids would follow in your footprints and all of that. You know, and look, I want my kids to do better than I do, and that's the American dream. We want our kids to do better. Do you think that has something to do with why we've had this massive skills drain, where people like you, people like me, want our kids to be better than we were, to not have to work as hard as we do, which is why we haven't seen the kind of people in these trades and doing these jobs?
I think it's got a lot to do with stopping the people that want to work. You know, some kids don't want to go to college. Some kids do. In my personal experience, my son just told me he wants to join a trade.
Good for him.
So hopefully I can get him in. But I do see there is a drop in numbers, and that's why, with the help of the District Council and the Chicago Federation of Labor, we'll build up the numbers. We have a program here called Chicago 360, and we're getting kids from high school coming into the trades.
Yeah, I mean, my son wants to be an engineer, and one of the things that he's going to do, he wants to join the Elevator Mechanics Union, because it's going to give him real-world experience and real-world application, and he wants to do that for several years, and I think he's going to get into it, he's going to find he loves it, and he's never going to leave.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where it can be a transition, it can be something that you learn, you do for several years, and then you move up and on. And in fact, you know, I know a lot of my building trades friends that they got into it, they love the work they do, and then they got into the training side of things, so that they're training the next generation. And that's, I think, Jose, one of the great things about the trades apprenticeship programs is that it's all really done within. It's by people who actually know what they're doing, instead of something who read about it in a book.
You cut your teeth. You put your time and you cut the teeth through the apprenticeship, and you go on forward. Now you said your son's going to be an elevator.
He wants to be, yeah.
Oh, that's one of the best paying jobs in the city here.
Yeah.
Anywhere, that's one of the most sought after jobs, because people that can work on elevators, you can go any building and you get.
He wants to be able to get
electrician and, you know, the carpentry and the pipe fitting and all the things that go into doing that. He wants to learn a little bit of all of it, and you know, he's going to master all of it at some point. I truly believe. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jose Alcala. He's the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades local president here at Local 184. Also, the Alcala president, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. The president here, also District Council 14 here in Chicago, talking about what's going on with labor and getting kids involved in the apprenticeship programs. But here's the problem, Jose. I'm looking at a moment where there's all of these attacks on labor again. It seems like constant onslaught of attacks where, you know, they don't want people, you know, being able to share in the labor the wealth that their labor creates. Here in Illinois, you've got this workers' rights amendment that I think is so, so very important. And just like, you know, the 8-hour day sprung out of Chicago, I think a push, and I'm hoping a push to demand labor rights again comes out of Illinois after this next election.
Hopefully on November 8th, it'll pass and we're out in force. It's a neutral thing. It's not Republican. It's not Democrat. We want the workers' rights amendment to be for everybody, the police officer, the firefighter, the construction worker, the person in a pizza restaurant, the person in a taco place. We want the rights for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Go back to a day where I was saying this, you know, the other day, that there used to be waiter and waitress unions. Yeah. There used to be, you know, insurance unions. There used to be every different work had a union to represent their interests.
Yeah.
And I think we're kind of in a moment. And I want to get your thoughts on this. I think we're kind of in a moment where, you know, people are looking at what's happened with the economy, how, you know, we're creating a whole lot of have-nots and a few haves. And people are looking at it going, hey, we should be getting some of this. We should be doing better. We shouldn't have to struggle as hard to make ends meet. Yeah, I want a job. I just don't want three or four of them.
Yeah, what you're looking at is like Local One. You want people that are in the service industry that have one job and that pays them enough to cover your bills, your rent, you don't want to work 20,000 jobs to cover that.
But that battle cry that came out of here, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. You should be able to, in this country, in the wealthiest country in the history of civilization, at its wealthiest moment, you should be able to get by on 8 hours of work so that you can enjoy your life. And then, you know, I go back to a friend from years and years ago. He was from Romania, and he said he came to this country so that he could work to live. That the work that he did paid for his life, not live to work, which is what it was like in Romania. He woke up every day and his only existence was to work every day. Work, 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 work. And that was it.
Yeah.
So for me, this is that moment, that pitch for the 8-hour day, that pitch for dignity and respect. This is that moment, I think.
Like here in Chicago, you got that. Other parts of the United States, you don't. The southern states, you got people out there just making the minimum. You know, we left in 67, the Great Migration.
Yeah.
And people, I just heard that somebody's telling me that a journeyman in Texas is making like $20-something an hour.
Wow.
And we're making $48, $49 an hour in our trade. That's why my dad left in 67. We haven't turned back. We've been here since.
Yeah, I talk about my story all the time. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. We were poor. We were dirt poor by American standards. And in just my lifetime, I've gone from poverty to living in a solidly middle-class existence. I've led a life, and I've said this a million times, that I could have never imagined. And it has everything to do with that union card I carry in my wallet.
Yeah.
Because, look, I could have worked just as hard. And I know a lot of people who do and still not have the ability to share in the wealth that my labor creates. And that, to me, is why the unions are so important. Also, it gave me a sense of empowerment, a voice on the job and a voice in society that you can stand up and say no without fear of, hey, I'm going to be fired or ostracized or worse. To me, this is why this is so important.
That's exactly why we want to pass the workers' rights amendment, to protect the workers. If he sees something wrong on a job site, safety-wise, he can report it without any reprisals.
No, I mean, look, as a painter working on these bridges and working on these windmills and working on things, you're not in great.
No.
This isn't the corner office. No. This isn't neat and tidy kind of work. This is dangerous stuff where safety matters. And if you don't have the ability to say, I don't think that's the right thing to do, I don't think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And if we pass it, you'll be protected. You know, we're in a sea of red. Illinois is the blue dot all around us.
Yeah.
And we need to keep it blue, and we need to make everything else blue around us.
No, I'm right there with you. Now, you're the president of LaCala, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. This is one of these moments where you go, this is a division, and sadly what happens to us is we get pitted against each other. I want everyone to do well. Explain to me what you guys do, why it's important, and what your goals are.
Well, Labor Council for Latin American Advancement is an arm of the AFL-CIO, the Illinois AFL-CIO, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. And we reach out for our Hispanic brothers and sisters. You don't have to be Hispanic to be part of LACLA. It's open to everybody. They're giving it the voice to the person that, like you said, is afraid to say something. We're here to advocate for them. And that's what it is. We bring people into the labor movement.
Yeah, for me, the idea is bringing people together. Doesn't matter. You know, as a kid, like I said, I grew up in a predominantly black housing project. The one thing that I knew when I learned very young, there's only one color that matters.
Yeah.
So it's just one color. It wasn't black and white.
No.
It was green. And the fact of the matter is we didn't have it. We were all broke.
Yeah.
And for me, this is all about making sure that we have the opportunity for people to lead better lives, to make the next generation better off than we were, and to leave something good behind. It doesn't get any more simple than that, does it?
Yeah, for our kids, correct.
Absolutely. But, Jose, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts with us.
Thank you, sir.
Taking a little time. Good stuff. Jose Acala, he is the president of Painters Local 184 here in Chicago, also LACLA president. Check out the work that they do. We'll get links out on social media how you can find them. IUPAT.org, the international site. You want to check out more of what the Painters Union does. Going to take a quick break back here from Chicago, broadcasting from our studios at WCPT AM 820. Our radio affiliate here. Quick break, right back.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at thericksmithshow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Again, here in Chicago, as we're talking about, you know, the history of what it took to build the 8-hour day, what it took to build the most prosperous working class in history, I have the eye towards the future and what needs to happen. And this workers' rights amendment here, again, can be that springboard, that you know, that thing that, you know, that sweeps across the country. Because, look, the attacks recently have kind of sprung out of here as well with the Janus decision and the assault on public sector workers and their ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and opportunity. And that's why I've asked Lauren Targos to come talk with us. Lauren is the Executive Vice President of Professional Labor with AFGE Local 704. Lauren, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
This is, you know, obviously the birthplace of the Janus decision and all of the attacks that happened on public sector workers. And you, as the Executive Vice President of Professional Labor, you've got to see those attacks happening, as we speak.
Absolutely. And, you know, Biden is certainly, you know, a welcome change from President Trump. But, he still can do more to make sure that all workers are, you know, feeling it from, especially in the federal government, that management is, being welcoming to labor instead of antagonistic. Yeah! We haven't seen that yet, at least in the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yep, and we've got future workers in the background saying, yes, we need to have better rights, because really it is about the future, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I have my three-month-old in the background here, and it's definitely given, it's my first kids, and so it's definitely given me a better perspective on why this fight is so important, you know, right now, because these are future workers, and, you know, the labor of creating those workers is certainly it's not taken into account in these contracts either.
And congratulations on triplets. So I'm sure everyone's going, why are there babies crying in the background? Because you're surrounded by children.
That's right. Triplets.
And this is one of those moments where you should be highlighting, you know, the fact that how hard it is for working mothers to be able to pursue their career and to be able to raise children and to be in this kind of moment, no?
Yeah, definitely. It's been very enlightening to be, especially talking to mothers of triplets. You know, I'm in these groups where all these triplet moms are juggling everything. And, you know, these babies are going to one day, you know, be the engine who creates profit, be the doctors for when we're elderly or the nurses when we're elderly. And we need to make sure that, you know, we're not putting all the labor to nurture them on the backs of one exasperated woman.
And it sounds like you are almost to that point. Now, you know, we were just in Scranton here recently where, you know, the sad reality is we're sending children in the mines 100 years ago. Can you imagine looking into your children's eyes and knowing that their future is, you know, in a coal mine somewhere at 5 or 6 years old?
It's remarkably cruel. And, you know, we're still, workers today are still fighting to overcome that history. And so it's so important for us to, you know, be teaching our children what the workers before us have overcome and know that the fight hasn't ended until, you know, we are winning the full fruits of our labor.
Now, you know, of course, you know, here in Illinois, you had a former governor who was someone who wanted to continue and accelerate that attack on workers by not just taking the bad no rights at work agenda statewide. They wanted to do it county by county and municipality by municipality, any way to attack your ability to support your family and to do better. They're all on board with.
That's right. Yeah, and it's, they succeed sometimes in dividing workers from their own interests and dividing workers from seeing the solidarity in their fellow workers and saying, oh, those workers are different and that's why they don't deserve the rights that you want for your family.
But
so it's important for us as we're fighting for this Workers' Rights Amendment to, you know, recognize that all around us we see workers and, you know, there may be different types of exploitation in different industries, but, you know, only in solidarity can we overcome, you know, the exploitation in each of our industries.
Yeah, now, as Executive Vice President of Professional Labor with AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, you see these attacks firsthand, and there's been an all-out assault on government workers, on people who get up every day and do things for we the people and help us, you know, get the things we need and, you know, do the jobs that have to be done. Tell me what that makes you think, what that makes you feel when you see that.
It definitely makes me, you know, disillusioned. All the problems that we have in our society right now, you know, climate change and, you know, so much. I happened to be reading this book on emotional intelligence and seeing how, you know, all the violence we see in our communities, from young children to affecting older adults, you know, all of that is the labor of public sector workers. You know, government employees are going to, the environmental protection agencies are going to be on the front line of fighting climate change. And teachers and social support workers in our schools are the folks who are nurturing our next generation. And, you know, I'd be remiss to not mention, you know, all the turmoil that teachers are dealing with in our schools right now. Health workers, you know, we are, public sector workers are the essential workers holding up such important, critical aspects of our society right now. And it's a crime to not give us full access to our workers' rights as we are, you know, holding up this guy right now.
Yeah, but again, it's this division between public sector and private sector that the wealth class seems to again be honing in on to divide working people. Do you see a division? Do you see a difference? Do you see a division there?
I mean, there's certainly, they try to portray a difference, but, you know, I see, you know, the mine workers who are being completely ignored, the warehouse workers, those are all private sector workers who are absolutely entitled to the fruits of their labor, just as public sector workers are. And so it's important for us to, you know, the United States, you know, is a capitalist country. And so even in the public sector, you know, in my job at the Environmental Protection Agency, I'm encouraged sometimes to think of the people I serve as customers. That's the language that's been given in some of our trainings. And so, you know, it's public sector, private sector, the boss is still, you know, the people who benefited from the Citizens United decision at the Supreme Court. This is all about, you know, profit over people, and workers in the public sector and private sector are fighting to put people over profit, and so that their children can, you know, not have to go into whatever metaphorical mines they create in the future.
No, that's an excellent point. So last question I've got for you, as you're looking at this workers' rights amendment, what's the message for people on both sides, the private sector, the public sector, or people who aren't in unions at all? What's the message to them?
You know, especially for folks who aren't in unions at all, I hope, you know, and I think all workers are seeing this, even in work in industries that aren't being unionized. They're organizing, they're talking to each other, they're pushing for the boss to, you know, change their working conditions, even if they aren't formalized into a union just yet. But they're seeing the benefits and the importance of having organized labor in their workplaces. And so this amendment is this is critical to vote yes. Every single worker needs to vote yes, so that workers in Illinois can set the standard for, you know, the country on what it means for workers to live a life, to work to live, not live to work. You know, the way rent is going up with inflation and, you know, the burdens on workers right now are overwhelming. And I think you'll see that in the public sector and the private sector. And so, you know, we need to be talking to our neighbors. And I know in an individualistic society, that's something that's difficult to do. But, you know, now we're going into an election. It's a great time to talk to your neighbor, someone you haven't talked to before, and connect with them on what their life is like as a worker. And you'll find a lot of commonalities and, you know, a reason to vote yes on this workers' right amendment.
Yeah. One of those things that hopefully will bring us back together. But Lorraine, I appreciate you taking time for us. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Lorraine Targus, she is AFGE Local 704's Executive Vice President of Professional Labor. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Follow us on the Working Class Heroes Tour. Right back from here in Chicago at WCPT Studios, AM 820. Back after this.
Radio of, for, and by. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.